Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. This is your host, Kim Justice, and I normally play the generic intro tonight. This is Brain Injury Radio Network. I'll identify our network at this point because I put in my regular Wednesday intro. The last Wednesday of every month is actually very special because it's our Simon Says segment where I have my wonderful, now very long-time co-host, Simon Lewis, author of Rise and Shine, which you can find information on him and it at riseandshinethebook.com or simonlewis.us. And again, under the heading of Brain Injury Radio, I'll tell you that my two books, which you can find on Amazon or you can get more information on my website, inaflash.org. In fact, the book is called In a Flash, Miracles Here and Beyond. It's about my story of my brain injury, and then Hootie's Hollow and the Magic Tree, which is a fun story that has a lot of takeaway nature lessons. This is the last day of Brain Injury Awareness Month, and I put my books on sale and slashed the price on Amazon a couple days into March, and then I forgot to tell anybody or mention it. Still haven't. And so I'm going to call it a spring sale now and let it go through April. So if you've ever wondered or been interested in reading one of my books, you can check them out on Amazon and you'll get them for a few bucks less. So anyway, I want to welcome you here tonight. If it's your first time, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We Recovery program because it is in the We that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. I'm going to bring Simon on in just one second. He's been recovering from, as many of you know, he's been going through a series of surgeries on his jaw to preserve his teeth and his jaw from the pain he had been having. And boy, it's hard for me to even say that with all the surgeries that he's had and how painful that is to have to go through. And he's just coming off another of those, but took a nap, and hopefully he won't nod off on us tonight. If he does, we'll cut him some slack for all he's been through, for sure. But tonight, the new catchphrase, reimagining, we've been hearing a lot in the last year, and that's better known as looking at something differently, creating change to implement the new vision. Sometimes we do that for ourselves, and others, people who think they know better, impose those changes on us. In the case of brain injury, we have a little of both. Those in the know often demonstrate the extent of their cluelessness, while others, in concert with us, help effect new changes that enhance our lives. Here we are at a place of new beginnings, growth, renewal, life springing forth after a dormant winter. The colors are brighter, or at least they're going to be real soon. The birds are singing again. It's officially spring. It's lighter longer. The bitter cold is over with, and so this is a time to refresh and renew, and we're going to be talking about that tonight. And then I mentioned to Simon, I wanted to talk a little bit about the vaccine. On social media lately, I've seen a couple of, more than a couple actually, people who have misunderstood, and I can see why they've misunderstood, you know, what group they're in. Is it time for them to get their vaccine? A few people who are very angry at their doctor. And so there's some misunderstanding out there about the vaccine, the COVID vaccine. And we've got a few points that'll just maybe clarify that for people. And so we're not going to spend a ton of time on that tonight, just some kind of basic things. Instead of hearing it 50 different places and having it come out a little different everywhere you hear it, we're just going to kind of encapsulate that a little and then go on to talking about spring. Now, Simon lives in California, and he's going to have a perception of spring. Most of you know I live in the Midwest, and we've had a brutal winter. In fact, I was telling Simon, having this topic, that it might have been a little premature for me, because, you know, our temps have been in the 40s, which beat the HE double hockey sticks out of the minus 35 temperatures that we were having with wind chills for such a long time. But we've got a little ways to go till we're steady in those 60s and 70s, and I'm looking forward to that. So there's not a ton of color yet, but the birds are definitely out. The nests are getting built. New life is going to be springing forward, and a new season of change. And some of that change we're not going to be able to help, and some of it we definitely are. With that, I'm going to bring on Simon right now. Welcome, Simon. How are you doing tonight? How are you feeling?
Well, Kim, thank you for asking, and I feel I'm doing just great, all the better for the honor of coming on your show. And I do just want to say two things in response to what you were saying. First of all, about your books, Hootie's Hollow is lovely. It's an absolutely lovely book, and it seems very appropriate to a spring show and you offering it during spring, because it is about reimagining. And what I particularly liked when I read Hootie's Hollow, because it's a short book with absolutely extraordinary photos. Whoever listens regularly and looks at Kim's Facebook site, these are national, it's probably not good even to say National Geographic quality, maybe that's infringing on their trademark or something, but they are extraordinary photos of Kim's friend the owl, who has been a regular visitor to her and her husband over, through several years. And it raises, in terms of reimagining, it sort of reimagines nature itself or herself, because what I got from it, Kim, when I was reading your book and looked at your photos, was that you're observing Hootie in his or her hollow, and who she is observing you and your husband in your home. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful reimagining springtime kind of a book. And your book about your aneurysm has enormous power. And I'll just say that because I don't want this all to be about, you know, book. But I really, they're two books to be very proud of. And I would encourage listeners to take a look at both of them.
Thank you. Well, I just decided, it's just one of those things, I decided for Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, I'd mark the price down for the month of March, and I did that, and then I didn't tell anybody. I forgot to mention it, you know? I had Gary figure out how to go in there on Amazon and mark my price down. I said, I think I'm going to do this for Brain Injury Awareness Month, and I was more thinking of the other book, you know, my In a Flash book, and doing it for Brain Injury Awareness Month. And then we did it, and the price has been down. But of course, you know, the books are a little older, and so I doubt anybody has, you know, been going there right now on their own. It's not like I've been promoting at all or a new book or anything like that. So I forgot to mention that they were on sale. But you're right about Hootie. One thing that is really incredible when I look at what I call divine intervention is that I wrote that book a year ago, November, and that was when I got the experience, since you read it, of being entertained and in awe and taking life's lessons from nature in my own backyard. And then by the next year at that time, well before that, in fact, November, December, January, February, March. What, 4 months later, a pandemic began. And then by the time a year later from when I wrote the book coming out, I was so glad that I had paused and taken the time to write that book and to notice those kind of things and those kind of life lessons, because just a few months later, a pandemic was going to start, and I was going to be spending a lot of time in my backyard, and I had already learned to appreciate it and, you know, to appreciate what you can do really close to home instead of pining about, not that we never pine, about not getting to live our life the way that we used to, certainly not, but, you know, it does talk about things to notice in your own yard. So thank you. And anyway, that's that. So they're on Amazon, or if you don't know what they look like or you can't find them, go to inaflash.org. There's a tab that says books, and there are hyperlinks that'll take you right to the books there, whether it's the book, the audiobook, or the ebook. So, and I appreciate any reviews if you do get the book also.
I'll just add, because for folk who are perhaps trapped inside, if you want to listen to 9 hours of Kelsey Grammer, the audio book of my book, Rise and Shine, The Path to Life, or The Path to Life, is 9 hours of Kelsey Grammer. And it has a lot of helpful, thoughtful perspective on long-term recovery. So, as I say, if you are interested in listening to a really wonderful voice for 9 hours, that's something to look at. And please, just like you said, Kim, the nurse, I won't go into details, but the surgeon who's been working on me, the nurse asked, and actually I gave her a copy of my book. And that was about a year ago, because I'm in long-term treatment for rebuilding my jaw. And it's going really great. That's why you can hear my voice and why I sound, and I'm smiling as I speak, which is really nice.
Yeah, it sounds
it just
great.
Came out yesterday. Yeah, so, but the nurse, she was interested. And so I gave her a copy of Rise and Shine. And just two sessions ago, and I never asked her, you know, I'm, it's interesting, Kim, when you said that, how you worked with Gary to lower the price of your book and then didn't tell anyone. I have the hardest time, even, as you know, I try to mention it occasionally, but I just don't. And I never asked the nurse what she thought or anything about that. So after about 8 or 9 months, because it's been a long process of treatment, she said to me when I arrived for my recent surgery that she had finished reading it. And she said, it's extraordinary, very quietly, because it's a professional setting, and she's the nurse in the clinic. And I thanked her very much, and I asked her. And the thing I would say, Kim, and I would echo for your listeners, it's especially nice with Amazon and Barnes & Noble if you want to write a review of Kim's work or of my work at the beginning of a new year. Because as a book gets older, I have a belief that the Amazon algorithms, the Observer, because they have millions of copies of books now in their library, of course, I think that when current reviews are being written, so that now if there's a review in 2021 of a book that you wrote, Kim, or both of your books, that were written before this year, so I think the fact that people write reviews, especially if they're positive reviews, causes Amazon's system to think, oh, this book is still a good book, and this is a book that people are still wanting to read or wanting to listen to, because Amazon owns Audible, who did my Rise and Shine audiobook. So I think you're also helping, because Kim's book, In a Flash, is remarkable about the experience of aneurysm. And so if you write a review of what you honestly think, I always say to people, please, only write what you honestly think. Somewhere
as long
in the
as
great system. What's that, Kim?
Sorry. I said, as long as it's good. Kidding. Tongue in cheek. Sorry to interrupt you. Go on, please.
No. You're right. I'm terribly, I don't know what the word is. Maybe it's the head injury. I just feel... But no, I think I've had maybe one. And my big goal was to have 100 reviews. I don't know why I thought that was nice, would be nice. And I think I'm up to about 80 reviews, because the book has sold thousands of copies. But most people read a book and they enjoy it, and they don't really want to sit down and write a review. But if you read In a Flash and you feel that has good information, or if you don't, you know, write a book, because it will tell a lot of people who visit sites and who Amazon or Audible recommend the book to, oh, it's an older book, but somebody in 2021 liked the book and thought it was relevant. It helps. So I'm probably saying it in far too great length, but once I get started on something, it's the lawyer in me, I tend to be thorough about it. So yes, Kim, I would echo, if you can write a review of Kim's book, or books, and if you're moved to listen to Kelsey Grammer or read Rise and Shine, that would be very, very nice. And I'm all right for 2021, because the nurse promised me that she would write what she honestly wrote. But of course, she'd already told me it's extraordinary. So I'm in good shape to have a good review to start the year. And just to put it in context, I once visited one of the Amazon physical bookstores. And they organize their books in an interesting way by the number of reviews online, that book. So, as I said, I'm trying for my book to get to 100 reviews. And I think in the Amazon bookstore, it's something like that at the front of the store are books that have received 1 million reviews, or 300,000 reviews, or 200,000 reviews. They're actually ranked in that way. So... And the irony of this is that, of course, the books that get the 1 million reviews are backed by the big publishing houses.
And big publishing houses.
They're celebrities.
Yeah, celebrities. Well, plan on getting some aerobics if you're going into a brick and mortar. I didn't know that they even had that kind of store. I will qualify. There is a difference. I mean, there's a big difference, but Simon not only tells his story, but he did an immense amount of research on his. My book was pre-radio, and it was done from a journal that I was keeping in that year after my aneurysm, and I didn't know anything but my story. I didn't know anything about the brain. I didn't do the research that Simon did. I didn't do any of that. I simply told my survivor story, which included a near-death experience, but just my story based on those notes. And that's actually what led me, and I didn't know anything about the brain at that time. All I knew was my story. And so now, I don't know how many shows weekly for 10 years, and for 1 year I was doing two a week. How many shows that is I have under my belt. Now I actually know some things about brain injury, but there's a big difference. Mine is a shorter, much lighter read, and Simon's is a much more informative read as far as all of the research that he did. But, you know, I talked about you last week in your book, Simon. My guest last week was an actor, and, well, an actor of sorts. He wound up being a fly on the wall. He wanted to be an actor, and he went to New York, as so many do. And he was there quite a while doing the odd jobs that folks do when they're waiting to be discovered. And that really didn't wind up being his path. He didn't wind up being discovered in that way. And he wound up being a bartender at the Broadway hit Hamilton. And so he was like the fly on the wall at Hamilton, and got to observe, and have relationship with the people, the actors who are in Hamilton, and of course the other people, the patrons coming to see the show. And he wrote a book called Hamilton, but that's not what he was here about. But because he was an actor, I did something kind of funny, and again, I forgot to do it tonight. He told me he thought I should keep it, but this is where you came up. I said, you know, Gary and I, a lot of you know that we're on opposite schedules, and Gary goes to bed very early, and I'm up late, and I sleep later, and he's up at like 4 o'clock in the morning or some crazy thing with the roosters, and you know, his eyes are starting to fall at about 7:30. I got to put toothpicks in there, and he's trying to be nice and act like he's attentive and he's there with me, but you know, I see the bags under his eyes, and his eyes, him starting to nod and then come up. So, you know, we'll eat dinner and watch a television program, and then the new thing has gotten to be a half-hour program. And so we started looking at some old ones and found Frasier. And so we've been watching Frasier, which really, I mean, it had been 100 years. When was that on, in the 80s or something? And that really is a hilarious show. You know, we've been watching it. But as you know from watching the show, and the reason you came up is what I said in the intro for my guest last week, Mike Anthony, was since my guest was an actor, he might appreciate this when I say, this is Kim, and I'm listening. And then I brought on Mike Anthony, you know, and I brought him on, and he was laughing when I brought him on, and he knew exactly who that was. And I told the story that I just told last week about the Frasier thing, and then I said, and to bring it all the way full circle, my co-host the last Wednesday of every month actually wrote a book, and Kelsey Grammer is who narrates the book. So that was kind of funny. When we first started watching Frasier, I didn't immediately register that. We were just, our mindset was looking for a half hour show, okay? And that was one of the first that came up. And of course, it came to me right away. But the fact that he was a shrink on the radio, you know, and that he would say, you know, whatever, this is Fraser Crane and I'm listening. So Mike last week told me he thought I should keep it, and I forgot this week. But anyway, I gave your book
I missed the show last week, but I was preparing. Last week on Wednesday, Wednesday is the day I was operated on, so I couldn't. I would have loved to have heard that. And that's hilarious. And, of course, they're rebooting the Frasier show. It's coming back after 20 years, and they're in the advanced stage of doing it. But I love that. And I always had hoped that I'd be able to approach his representatives because of being a television psychologist or psychiatrist about the mind. And I must say everybody, including Kelsey Grammer, were extraordinary. Because he does. I mean, he has that wonderful voice. I'm listening. And I'll say this about the book, and thank you, Kim. The reason I wrote the book was that, and many listeners may have learned this about their own experiences, it's very difficult to find out information about good, proven, medically approved solutions if they're not actually directly offered by the doctor or the hospital that you're going to. The way that I've heard it phrased, and I like this, is that even with the internet, in the world of medicine, information tends not to flow. It doesn't flow around. It doesn't flow into the internet. I mean, you'll find lots of articles, but you won't find interesting things about specific solutions that might apply to a specific person, unless you happen to have the good luck to be going to that facility that offers it. Instead of flowing around in the community, the information pools, and it pools around centers of excellence. So it kind of stays just in the facility where it's being offered. Or even, as I've experienced, stays with the individual clinician who is offering a particular course of interpretation or treatment. And that's why I wrote Rise and Shine, was to sort of break that secrecy, open up the dams so that people could read about specific technologies. And that's the book website has images. Because I wanted people to be able to print out the images and go to their doctor and say, look, this technology exists. Would this technology help me? Would it be relevant? And force the doctor to say yes or no, or I don't know. And if the answer is yes, it might be relevant, but I can't tell you anything more than that. It might cause a few patients to start phoning around to find a facility that maybe offers that modality. And that's especially true with brain injury, because there are so many different injuries. Each, as we know, each brain injury is unique to the person as to which functions have been impacted and how much each function has been impacted and how much might be restored of that function through the four A's of recovery that Brain Injury Radio Network talks about. So that's why I wrote Rise and Shine, was to help the information flow. So thank you, Kim, from my heart, for saying about that the research that I did and the research I put on the website. And of course, huge thanks to the doctors, many of whose actual names I used. I asked for permission. The neurologists tended to say no, because I suspect that they have such liability for malpractice. It's such a difficult area. Anything to do with the nerves, as everybody listening to this program probably knows, the biggest nerve in the body is our brain. And the complexity of working with the brain is so great that the neurologists and the neurosurgeons in my book tended to say, no, love the idea, but we won't, don't want to be named. But many of the surgeons, many of the practitioners and clinicians, I actually named, and they provided input on each paragraph so I could make it as correct at the date of publication as I could. So thank you, Kim. And now I should probably leave you to lead us to the next topic, or maybe we're going to talk about vaccine or something, because I'm so excited and so honored to be doing this show. And Kim, you're the best.
Well, thanks, Simon, and you're the best. Part of this started, and we're not going to be lengthy. I know you guys have heard a lot of shows on COVID, but it's not like we can quite get it out of our mind. You know, I thought that I was hoping, because, you know, the hospitalizations were down, I was hoping it was running its course, and I was very hopeful about the vaccine. And I still am, but in this time, you know, I made a tongue-in-cheek joke when the virus first started that whether it's fancy dishes or fashion or Broadway plays or whatever it is, that everything starts on the coasts and works its way in. And with the virus, that's the way it happened too. You know, the coasts and all the peripheral all got hit with the virus. And we were horrified in the Midwest watching this happening until it landed on us, you know, in the Midwest and colored in the blank of the whole country. For some reason, if you look at a big map at this point, you know, the variants or the mutations of the COVID-19 virus have started to happen and are, well, the UK, the B117 mutation that they're calling the UK version of the virus is closing down parts of Europe right now, and it is supposedly a lot more contagious, and it's hitting not only the elderly, but this one happens to be going after, you know, the 30 to 45 year olds. It's hitting younger people and children. And last week we had a daycare, a simple neighborhood daycare, have 100 people were infected, and this included the children that were in the daycare, but then the workers in the daycare and the parents. And then as it works, who knows how many people that 100 people came in contact with, and it is the UK strain of the virus.
Oh, Kim, I'm so sorry.
Well, and then a doctor came on, the one from University of Nebraska Medical Center who does the speaking on these issues, came on and talked about, and we've been seeing it all over the country, you know, people are tired of the virus. It's spring. As many of you saw, people went nuts on spring break. There were more middle-aged people, I think, than college kids down at spring break in Florida. But they went absolutely insane down there, and people are ready to go insane, get a vaccine, throw their masks away, go back to their old life, and just go a little crazy after winter and a year of this. And now is not the time, I guess I would say. But I do have a couple facts, because I was reading, and it was actually a couple of our listeners and then a friend of mine, and they had some incorrect information, and that made me think that a lot of people might have some incorrect information. Now, on Friday, I got the first of my two vaccines, and my husband and I happened to have Pfizer was what we were given. You don't get to pick which one you want. But one of the people, one of our listeners, was very angry at his doctor. And he had been calling the doctor's office trying to get information and trying to get a vaccine for he and his ailing mother, and wasn't getting any help and wasn't getting a call back. And so I'm just going to say a couple quick things, and then Simon can add whatever he might want. But it's your county or state health department, or even your favorite local news channel that you can find where vaccines are being distributed. I don't know about every other place in the country, okay? I called the national CDC, their information line, which I'll give you, but they haven't called me back. They do have, though. I would encourage you to call. I will tell you that their website and their recording that you'll hear are behind and have not been updated, and I will explain to you why that is in a couple of moments, but for what I'll tell you is wrong, the rest of it is all right, and it might be worth you taking down the national CDC COVID information line, and it's 800-232-4636. Again, 800-232-4636. And it will tell you the things that you need to be doing in addition to the vaccine, and it will repeat to you where you can find the vaccine. Now, I can only speculate that the reason it isn't your doctor in most places that's doing this, or the healthcare provider you're used to, is this is a government program. These vaccines are free. And you'll say, but Walgreens and CVS and, you know, some of the grocery stores are doing it, and that is true. But they're under what's called the Government Emergency Pharmacy Program. And so their computers are likely tied in with the state health departments and the government. This is a government ball game. And so you want to get a hold of your county. If you live in, let's say, Frederick County, then Google Frederick County Health Department, and you should be able to see on the website. And most of these places all have phone numbers. Sadly, like I said, I couldn't get through on the national one today. Hopefully on the state ones, you might have a long wait, but be able to get through. You don't just have to use the computer in the event you don't have one. Maybe a friend has one and can give you the phone number. But there, or again, my local media channels every night are telling where people can get the vaccine, including the pharmacies and the places that the health department is distributing the vaccines. And in our case, here, you make an appointment and you go to the appointment, and everyone's wearing masks and they're 6 feet apart. And I got to tell you, for a minute, I was a little bit nervous. It's been a year since I've been around that many people, since I've walked into a building and been around that many people. So, you know, I was a little taken back for half a second. Plus, I'm a shot weenie. I'll tell you, the shot didn't hurt at all. It was like a flu shot. When they called it an intramuscular shot, I thought, oh God, it's going to be like a tetanus shot or something. It's not flu shot or something, just a shot. and then you go. And if you happen to have a Krispy Kreme franchise where you live and you flash your card that you get, they give you a card that shows a stamp that you've been vaccinated that day. And on the back of it, they give you the date. They tell you when and where you will report in 21 days in this case. I'll explain that in a minute. And then you go and you get your second vaccine. And if you have a Krispy Kreme in the neighborhood and you go through the drive-through and flash your vaccine card, you'll get a free donut. So I did post a picture where I was smiling, trying to make light on my Facebook page because I felt fine right after the vaccine. And I do want to tell you folks that 58 or 60 people, Gary and I, what we did was a funny thing. I felt fine after, immediately after the shot. We went through Krispy Kreme because we happened to have one close by. And we don't go get donuts. I don't think we've had a donut in years. But we did stop and get a donut. And then just as a joke, we did a selfie in the car where we leaned our heads together and put the donut up like a monocle on our opposite eyes, looking through them, and said, one down, just got our first Pfizer vax. And I had a smile on my face, and we had the donut, and that was at noon that we got the shot, so that was probably when we were getting the donut or whatever. And I came home and took a nap, which I normally do anyway. But when I woke up from the nap, and it was one of those naps that you fall so deep, and I didn't even think I was that tired, but one of those naps that you fall so deeply into the nap, when you wake up, you don't know if it's daytime or nighttime. You know, it takes you a second to get oriented. Now, I've had that happen without any kind of shot before. So that was that, for what it's worth. You know, that was probably just me, because I had stressed about getting the shot, so it was over with, and I probably just fell into that deep, deep nap. But when I got up and started walking down the hallway, I had this sensation of being in a fun house, like when I was a kid, like the wall, like the floor was slanted, hallway was tilted. Now, I leaned against the wall, and that only lasted for a few minutes. I shook it off, and all I thought was, wow, that was a really freaky experience. Sure glad that passed. And it did, and that was the end of that. And then we ate dinner, and after that, a headache started building and building and building until my head was just pounding from the inside, like lightning going on the inside over my eyebrows and around the back of my head. And it was just a horrible, horrible, relentless headache that made me want to barf. I didn't, but I felt like it. And I will offer you
must have been terrified.
I was terrified, and a couple people in those comments, you know, this 58 or 60 comments that people made, because just about everybody my age is getting that shot right now, because that's what group it was. And the ones older than me, you know, their group has gone already and have either gotten or any second are getting their second shot. And then our group right now, so my old school chums and things like that, are all getting their first shot. So lots of people were making comments, more comments. I think only Hootie's gotten more comments on a post than this vaccine. But to make y'all feel better, most people got by fine and didn't have any issue on their vaccine. There were a couple people that felt poorly like I did and made made that comment, you know, that they felt poorly about it. And one person said she got a really bad headache and it wasn't a big deal. She just took a couple aspirin and went to bed. Now, the next person that made a comment was someone who I know from the brain aneurysm community. And when I made the comment, and I don't talk about that on my main personal Facebook page. I save that talk for my In a Flash page. But the people who have had aneurysms who know me that way know that about me when they're seeing my personal page. And I said, it scared me badly. And people listening will understand that after having a brain aneurysm and that kind of headache, it's frightening. And a lot of us suffer from PTSD anyway. You know, in the early days, we'd even just start getting a little routine headache, and it would make us so nervous because of what we had gone through, you know, what that grew into. And so the one thing, though, that I did is I know that stress makes everything worse. And so what I had to do was lay back, and I put on some of that music, Simon, that I've been sending you, Ella Roberts and that. And I just closed my eyes, and I took deep breaths, because when you get nervous, you tend to take shallow breaths or hold your breath. And that makes the stress and the pounding worse. And so the first thing I won't recommend that. That's what I did. And then I took a couple Advil. Tylenol. I took a couple Tylenol. And before I went to bed, it was still pounding. This went on for hours. I wound up taking another Tylenol before I went to bed. And then the next day I had what I call the imprint. I didn't have the pounding headache anymore, but I just had the ripple of where the headache had been. So I'd say that must be a slight headache after the hell the night before. And then I had a headache hangover the next day, which basically just means that I was super fatigued. And slept a lot that day because pain takes a lot out of you. But as I said, out of the 60 comments, there were 3 or 4 people who had problem, and it went away. You know, it went away in 24 hours or so. So that was the way it went. But anyway, so. What we have as of yesterday, according to the CDC, because what we're being told is, what we're trying to do is get a herd immunity going so that we can try to get back to some semblance of what our lives looked like before. I don't know if we'll ever get back to exactly the way it was before. We might always be more aware, if at the very least, we'll probably be more aware of washing our hands, you know. We'll probably be more aware if we have underlying conditions of wanting to wear a mask longer than they even tell us we have to, or maybe taking a pass on going to some events we might have used to have gone to without even a second thought, because there's a lot of people there, and none of this is 100%. These vaccines came about under President Trump's Warp Speed program, and there is no vaccine for COVID that prevents COVID. What they did do is go through clinical trials, and they came up with what's called the Emergency Use Act, And that is made for times exactly like this, when things have been tested. They're not just throwing something at you that hasn't been tested by a lot of people, tens of thousands of people, but not as many or as long as it takes other drugs to get to market. But, you know, when you're looking at the number of people dying and getting permanently disabled, which is something that they haven't talked about as much out there. You know, you've heard people say, oh, it was like the flu and that was the end of it. I don't know why people are making a big deal of it. And you've heard about a lot of deaths, but you haven't heard as much. And now I know personally, several people who are going to be disabled for the rest of their life because of damage that was done to their organs from this virus. One woman is getting 3 breathing treatments a day a year later. Another friend of mine's husband got COVID and the virus went to his heart and he's having to get a pacemaker, and if that doesn't work, a heart transplant. I could go on, but they're called long haulers, and those are people that get the virus and wind up getting permanent damage, as I said. So for the people who've been on the fence about the virus, I'm not going to preach to you either way. It's your decision, because to be honest with you, Gary and I made our appointment. I was on the fence. He was on the fence, but he was going to do whatever I decided. He was nice about that. And we made the appointment because you'd rather have the appointment when you can get one. And then, you know, if I would have decided to cancel it, I would have given them plenty of notice and canceled it and decided not to do it. But the whole thing about this emergency act is when the benefits outweigh the costs. So if you're worried about what the long-term effects of these vaccines are going to be, we kind of have seen what the long-term effects of COVID can be. And for those of us in the brain injury community, and again, I'm not telling you what to do, this is your decision, but for me, what made me decide is I've lived with a chronic condition because of a brain injury, a brain aneurysm back in 1995. Every day of my life, I've gotten up in pain since 1995. What I didn't want to do, I wanted that extra layer of protection, is what they're calling the vaccine, to give me one more thing. It's like putting on the fifth mask, I guess. A little better than that. You can breathe a little better, you know, by getting the vaccine. But if there was a chance that was going to help me not get the virus, to me, and this is just me, I would go to any lengths to not get that virus, because you don't know, if you think you don't know what the vaccine's going to do, you really don't know what that virus is going to do, or if it ever goes away, if it just parks in your body somewhere. You know, years ago, I got shingles. That's a virus. And some of you might get cold sores, a certain kind of, I think that's herpes A, maybe. And, you know, viruses don't always go away, like bacterial infections that you get an antibiotic, and a lot of times that's the end of it. A virus isn't necessarily that way, so I'm scared to death of getting COVID. And so for me, I guess, and at my age, to get that extra protection and get the vaccine was a decision that I made. Yesterday, Maine, South Dakota, Rhode Island, Alaska, and New Mexico had about 20% of their population fully vaccinated. They're looking at 80-85% to have herd immunity. So that's where we stood yesterday. D.C., Georgia, Alabama were under 12% of their population and at the bottom of the list. And all the other states are somewhere in between, in the teens. That was yesterday. They're giving out a lot more vaccines now, so those numbers will be slightly higher. But as you can see, we're a ways off from herd immunity. And what happened was, here, this lends itself to the outdated information on the CDC website. This was as of yesterday. On their phone line, it was as of today, they had outdated information. So if you look tomorrow, maybe they will have updated it, but it took everyone so by surprise, they didn't have the time to do it. But, you know, in the beginning on the CDC site, what you saw was very orderly. I don't remember the age bracket, but it was our elders first, let's say 75 and over. And that group was going to get to go first. And the thing behind this was, we're going to protect our most vulnerable, showing that perhaps we had learned a lesson from a year later from the beginning virus. And so they started first with a group of our elders. Then the second group was supposed to be people with underlying conditions. And then they were going to go down to the whatever, 55 to 75. The first responders and the doctors and nurses and so forth were there with the older group in that first batch. But it was orderly. They had them in batches like that. And the supply of the vaccine, it was coming in once a week. And so, you know, you wanted to make sure you had enough vaccine to be able to facilitate the appointments that were being made for the group that was eligible to come in for the vaccine, and that was going on. Then interestingly, I thought I was going to be next a few weeks ago as a person with an underlying condition, and they bumped us, and our governor, boy, he was ticked off. But the county health department decided to let the Cox Cable people and the Verizon and T-Mobile people go first because they thought that it was more important than protecting people with underlying conditions to protect the infrastructure. And so,
interesting.
And the teachers,
interesting.
And the teachers won't go back to school and have a really big lobby. And so the teachers and Cox Cable and Verizon and T-Mobile came before the people with pre-existing conditions. In fact, I didn't even get in as a person with pre-existing conditions because after they did all the groups I just mentioned to you, it was the turn of my age bracket to be getting the shot. And so Gary and I, you know, went together and were able to get the shot just being in the 55 to whatever, 75 group or whatever it is. Okay, so we get our first shot on Friday, and on the weekend, all hell broke loose. I heard the local story about the UK variant. I had heard just a passing thing, you know, about Europe and tried to ignore it, you know, that it wasn't going to come here. But it's here. There's like three variants, the African variant. I think there's a Brazilian. They've talked about a California one, and the UK one seems to be super lethal and virulent and violent and hitting a younger age group. And they are all here in the United States right now. Anyway, we've got a little ways to go. As of Tuesday at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the unofficial COVID toll positive cases stood at 30,332,259 and 550,071 deaths, which was up almost 70,000 and 750 respectively since the same time on Monday. So in 24 hours, it went up that much. And they're thinking it's due to the variant. So the cases are on the rise again in many part of the states. And the president is calling for the mayors and governors. A lot of places had really, our states, one of them, had put things back to full speed. Restaurants and everything, not at 50% anymore, opened everything back up. And they are suggesting now, and maybe that would have been for the progressive states like Florida and Nebraska have been all along, and a lot of the states have been that way. That would maybe be fine if it weren't for these variants, these mutations. And so if we don't want to wind up with everything closed down again and do a replay, if we don't want to learn from our past mistakes, then we're going to go opening everything up. People are going to be getting their shot or not getting their shot, get spring fever, throw their mask away, and go try to live life like they did before. And a variant of the virus that's much more contagious and violent is going to spread. And now some of this is your choice. Do you want to live like this for 5 years, or do you want to try to mop this up? If you do want to try to mop this up, as soon as we possibly can, you might want to think about the virus. Keep wearing the mask. Keep social distancing. Even after you've gotten your vaccine, continue to practice the safety protocols until we can get that herd immunity and pray that it works. But at 20%, you can see that that's going to take a minute. So the toll of spring and the changing of the clocks, we're going to talk about positives for that. But don't rush to abandon safety protocols. The last thing I'll have to say on that is the efficacy rates of the vaccine against infection. As I said, there is no vaccine that cures COVID or that keeps you from getting it. The trials on these vaccines were done to prevent, hopefully, death rates, mortality, and moderate to severe cases that required hospitalization. That's what they were designed to do. Now, with luck, you won't get the virus at all. That's what I'm praying for. But there are three vaccines that have been approved under the Emergency Use Act right now. Pfizer, and you have to get two shots 21 days apart. And that has a 90% effective rate against getting the virus. Now, there are different percentages that talk about, and it's 100%. I'm not saying that, okay? They might say it's 90% that you won't die or have to go to the hospital, 98% or whatever. The percentages I'm giving you are that about contracting coronavirus. It's 95% effective that you won't contract the virus with Pfizer, 94.1% with Moderna, 66.3% for Johnson & Johnson. and that's one shot. Pfizer and Moderna are two shots. Johnson & Johnson is one shot. Johnson & Johnson is not as widely distributed in the United States right this minute, although they are busily whipping up batches as we speak to get it here. But right now, at least in the Midwest, Pfizer and Moderna appear to be the preponderance of the vaccines that are available. And Johnson & Johnson, they've talked about our country giving them, selling them, whatever we're doing with them, to other countries, third world countries and so forth. And they were thinking of doing that with the J&J vaccine, and I can only assume it's because it's one shot and they wouldn't have to keep track of people in another country getting two shots on time and risk wasting the vaccine. And so we'll see how that plays out. But those are the three that are currently approved. One that's been approved for quite a while in Europe is the AstraZeneca. That's also two shots. It's said to be 76% effective. Only my opinion, I would never get that vaccine. It was shut down in Europe for a while because there was thrombosis, clotting issues that were happening. And the powers that be wound up saying that, and they gave an example that there were like 60,000 people who had clotting issues out of 600, and saying that that was an acceptable number, and that that number was about the same you'd get in the general population without a vaccine. Well, to me, and I'm not very good at math, but I mean, if you were one of those without a shot, maybe going to be vulnerable to be in that 60,000, then with that particular vaccine, that would put you in like 120,000 possible having those. Anyway, they wound up changing their mind. I don't really know the circumstances behind that. They started giving people in Europe that vaccine again, and those people are getting that vaccine, where we've been using the hell out of Pfizer, they've been using the heck out of AstraZeneca over there. They put it back on the shelves, and there after that first scare, and decided to give it to people again, that the benefits still outweighed the cost. And now there's a second scare, red flag, and that's that the younger population now over in Europe, they've gotten down to where they're vaccinating that younger group, you know, around their 40s, not the elderly, but the people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and those people are getting the clotting issues. And so what I can tell you is that here in the U.S., we are sitting on 30 million doses of AstraZeneca in their factory in Ohio. And we have not approved that for use in the United States yet. Europe is begging us for some of that vaccine because they're running short over there. And we were probably hanging on to it because with this variant, what happened over the weekend is all that orderliness of the different classes and am I eligible to get my shot yet, that all went out the window. Starting Monday, 2 days ago, in my state and a dozen others, everybody who's of age is eligible to get a shot. We're on. It's a race between the virus and getting the vaccine. And so the distributors of the vaccine and the vaccine companies had no idea that this was going to happen. And so it's going to be a cluster for a minute. The supply isn't going to meet the demand. There aren't going to be enough workers to be able to put the shots in the arms if there's enough product. And but they Katie bar the door, everybody go. And the president promises that by the 19th of April, it'll be the same around the country. So no matter what age you're at, you'll be eligible to get the vaccine if you can get it. And another one in the hopper is Novavax, and neither of those two, AstraZeneca or Norovax, have been approved for emergency use in the U.S. yet. So we're looking at three vaccines. Last thing I'll tell you is, because they didn't say this on the website, and it will help you, it does say on the website, don't take any kind of Tylenol or anything before you go in and get the vaccine. And unless you're reading the CDC site, which nobody really does, you just show up and report for your shot, nobody tells you that. But, and I can't explain to you why. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert. I'm just telling you the research I've done. But you're not, it does say on their website, do not take anything, pain reliever, Advil, any Tylenol, before you go get the shot. It is okay if you do it after. One thing it does not tell you on the website that I will tell you is, after you get that vaccine, drink lots and lots and lots of water. That'll help get that circulating in your system, and maybe it'll just help the vaccine get circulated in your system, and maybe you won't have a couple of the issues that I had. That was a lot more time than I wanted to take on it, but is there anything that you'd like to add? Hopefully that clears up some very basic questions that people have about where to get information and what to expect when they go get a shot. So it's not your doctor's fault if he's not attentive to this. This is a government deal, and you're all going to be eligible to go get a vaccination. If not right now, soon, in the next couple weeks. Simon?
Well, Kim, I have, first of all, thank you. That's really helpful information. And because I'm a lawyer, I have to make one small note, because you did such a lot of work to set out the information across the country. But one small thing, you were referring at certain points to an Emergency Use Act for these vaccines. The Emergency Use Act, as I understand it, is what is granted by the FDA for medical devices, so that the Emergency Use Act is exercised by the FDA when there is a medical device that is particularly useful. For vaccines, I believe it's an emergency use authorization. It's a terminology thing, but
it is. I'm sorry, and thank you, Simon. And I do want to say, yes, I'm sitting here looking at the Pfizer sheet they gave me. I was looking at my notes, and I did make the mistake. Now I've got the sheet they gave me when I got my shot in my hand, and you are absolutely right. You know, that's confusing. They're both EUA, you know,
yes,
EUA.
Yes.
But I made a mistake, and again, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not representing myself as such, and I did make a mistake. So explain that again to him real quick, Simon.
What's that? Oh yes, the Emergency Use Act is what's provided when the FDA grants use for a medical device, a medical device. For example, if there was a breakthrough with heart pacemakers, and mm-hmm. it was a pacemaker that would save lives for particular classifications of patients, the FDA might, under the Emergency Use Act, allow a manufacturer to start using it to save that population of patients who would otherwise die while waiting for that device. But for vaccines, it's an emergency use authorization. And everything I'm going to say, again, just like you said, Kim, so rightly, is not telling people what to do. It's just my perspective from my own research. I completely agree that the risks now are boredom and complacency. The great thing about America is it is irrepressible. This is not a good thing, however, in the context of a pandemic. And just to run some numbers that I was putting together, last year, COVID was the third leading cause of death in the U.S. There's an awful lot of people. After cancer and heart disease, those are the other two, then it was COVID. And that's based from the CDC, the National Center of Health Statistics. And that was from January through to December. And I think they counted through December 690,000 deaths from January through December. But as you were saying, Kim, that number is now has risen substantially. So I would also want to point out one thing, because it's nice to be able on this program to address information that is misleading. And it's been noted that of the 540,000, or the number, Kim, that you just pulled from the CDC website, at first, only a small percentage listed COVID as the only cause of death. More than 97% listed COVID along with other health problems. And that led a lot of more political pundits than medical. As I've said before, people have to decide who they want to listen to.
Yes.
I believe in science, and I believe that doctors and people with white coats have had to do some awfully hard work, frankly, to become doctors with white coats, whereas political pundits don't really have to do much more than have persuasive faces and be decent writers, and they can go out and write and be pundits. That's a skill. I mean, Kim has written books. I've written a book. There's a lot of skill and hard work involved in writing a book. Doctors really have to work awfully hard for years to become doctors. It's a different kind of effort. So in the case of a pandemic, I'm much more interested in hearing what doctors and scientists and epidemiologists are saying than I am listening to political pundits. And this whole thing about the people who are saying, well, really, COVID isn't killing that many people because they died of obesity, they died of this and that, because there were, and it was true, that more than 97% of these individuals who died had other health problems. But what the experts have been saying is that those deaths last year, which put it number three, by and large would not have occurred had COVID not made those conditions worse. And there's the quotation from... This is a quotation from Dr. Hugh Cassier, Director of Critical Care Services at the Sandra Atlas Bass Heart Hospital at North Shore University Hospital, who's part of Northwell Health on Long Island, New York. And what Hugh Cassier said was, quote, "From a physician who has taken care of these patients and signed way too many death certificates, I can tell you for a fact that patients died because of COVID-19. These are people with underlying medical conditions who, if they had not developed COVID, would still be alive, COVID-19.
Exactly.
So that's hopeful.
Exactly.
So we don't want to be complacent.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Simon, and then I'm going to shut up because I know I've talked a lot tonight, but I'm so glad you brought that up because I have heard the political end on that. They got paid for putting down COVID, blah, 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 blah. But I'm telling you, from the people I know personally and the quote that you just gave, it's absolutely right. Yes, some people had pre-existing conditions, but they wouldn't have died of those pre-existing conditions had they not gotten COVID. Also, it comes out in the wash because people like someone I know had a bleed, an aneurysm, and she's when they went in to fix her. And she had had COVID, and they put her cause of death down as a stroke. Now, as far as I'm concerned, this lady had an aneurysm in 1994. I had mine in 95. Neither of us have had another. Yes, it's possible that she had one, but she had just gotten over COVID. So for as many as people think were put down bogus, there were causes of death that were put down like heart attack or encephalitis or a number of other things that but for COVID wouldn't have been the cause of death. So I think the average on these numbers and everything they're talking about is as close to accurate as you can get because it comes out in the wash.
Yes, and the other thing I wanted to say is a couple of things about looking around the world. There is a difficulty here, I think, in America, and the difficulty is to do with money. And I have colleagues who work in medical research, and they comment that when they look at medical research, and I would suggest this for anyone that wants to do their research online, and they'll find medical articles. And what these people have told me is that more and more in recent years, when you see a medical research article, the first question is it peer-reviewed? Now, because of the pandemic and the urgency, many articles are being printed, research articles are being published before they have gone through peer review. And that's understandable. But take a careful look at the origin of the research. And the other, if you want to dig a little bit deeper, I've also been told that whereas before you could just look at the institution that provided the research, it's become very relevant now to look down to the end to see who paid for the research to be conducted. And based on that, you might suspect that there has been some bias within the research. Not necessarily knowing bias, but the kind of unconscious bias where an individual or a group or a company is paying for research, and the people who are being paid to do the research know perfectly well the outcome that the funder wants to be the result of the research. So
yeah.
I would be careful, but in terms of things like the fact that COVID has killed many people, the fact that 80% of those people, something like that, had obesity, to my way of thinking, doesn't then say, okay, I'm not going to worry about COVID because I'm not obese. What it's telling me is that this is a disease that affects blood circulation. The really good thing is that from this, we are going to learn, and science is going to learn, much, much more about the basic biology of human blood. That's really important because without blood, you're dead. And very quickly, if your heart stops, you die really fast and you don't get to come back. I understand that there are religions that believe in reincarnation. That's fine. But you don't come back in the shape or form that you were in. Without blood, you're dead. And the fact that this disease, people with obesity who have constriction or limitation in their circulation, indicates that that's a significant factor. Your account, Kim, of the person that you know who had aneurysm and stroked out while it was being treated, aneurysm is a circulatory stricture, an effect on circulation. So I would urge that we're all careful, and I want to tell a story. Part of this thing about cautioning against complacency, and I understand it's really hard if you have children who just want to get out there and party. It's tough. But the President of France just, and I think this was yesterday, he's just ordered, that's President Macron, he's just ordered a COVID lockdown across all of France, and he's closed the schools. Why is this significant? And the reason I want to flag it is because, as you've discussed, Kim, we are encountering in the United States the spread of the higher infectious and the higher mortality versions of COVID. The first one was bad enough, the British variant, the African variant. But this was on Wednesday, so I think this may even have happened today. And this is the President of France ordering France into its third national lockdown, and the schools will close for 3 weeks. He's pushing back on a third wave of this virus that is threatening to overwhelm all their hospitals. Their death toll is nearing 100,000 there. And this is significant, especially because President Macron had to abandon his goal of keeping the country open to protect the economy. President Macron originally, and by training, is an economist. So he's a smart guy. I mean, again, he's sort of a scientist of the economy. But what he said in a televised address to the whole of France was, quote, "We will lose control if we do not move now." So he's had to reverse course. Now I'm going to skip over the specifics about the fact that he tried to avoid a large-scale lockdown, and because, of course, France has had a terrible slump last year from this. But he says that the former – actually, I'm sorry, he was not an economist. I'll correct myself. He's a former investment banker, which I used to be once way back in London before I came to America. But he says the former investment banker's options narrowed as more contagious strains of the coronavirus swept across France and much of Europe. So now let's turn to the United States. And you, Kim, have done a wonderful summary of what's happening here. I want to point out one thing, though, that also just happened. And the headline, Wisconsin Supreme Court strikes down governor's mask mandate. And this is by a 4-3 vote. By a 4-3 vote, they ruled that the governor of Wisconsin had violated state law by unilaterally issuing multiple emergency orders to extend the mask mandate for months. It found that he exceeded the needed legislative approval to issue more orders after the expiration of the initial 60-day mandate he issued in August. And I don't live in Wisconsin, but if I lived in Wisconsin, I would be pretty mad, because I would be asking myself, if a former investment banker, who I have to assume is relatively Wall Street friendly, business friendly, is an investment banker, if he's had to reverse course because of the effects of the more infectious and more deadly versions of the vaccine, why should four judges who are not scientists, who are not epidemiologists, issue a ruling by 4-3 that forces an elected official to change course? Because the outcome is predictable. What will happen if everybody stops wearing masks in Wisconsin, there will be a surge in Wisconsin. I'll talk a little bit about California, because, Kim, you were wonderful explaining about your home state. April the 1st, tomorrow, any Californian 50-year-old will be eligible to get their vaccination. And just like you said, Kim, 2 weeks later, April 15th, all California residents 16 or older will be eligible to book their shots. And you can schedule an appointment online. In California, that's being done through something called the California My Turn portal. If you're listening from California, the website is myturn.ca.gov. And there'll be the opportunity to get the vaccine at no cost. That's the approach that's being taken here. But exactly like you said, Kim, the vaccination supply is limited at present. California was starting with the groups at highest risk, people 65 and older. But now they've widened it out. If you go to the portal, you can answer questions and make an appointment if you can schedule one. I'm less concerned about the lack of supply because of the fact that Merck and Johnson, these two giants, under pressure from the government, U.S. government, have combined their manufacturing forces. I think I read that this week 11 million doses of one of the vaccines was arriving in California in a week, just in the 1 week, something like 11 million. And in California, the way it's working is they're going to add more appointments and expand through local public health departments, such as LA County, Ventura County, Orange County. They're going to be working through local pharmacies. And in case of, I live in obviously Los Angeles, they're going to be working through the LA City vaccine, also have an appointment website. The problem in California, this is what I love about America, it's always complicated, but it keeps everyone on our toes. We have to survive this together by sharing knowledge. The governor of California signed a no-bid contract with Blue Shield to make Blue Shield the third-party administrator in charge of allocating the vaccine doses. So nobody except Blue Shield, I think, knows how many vaccines are going to come to whom and when. So the major major hospital system to which I go has no idea what's going to come down the turnpike until it does, except there's going to be a lot, and they're not at present offering a choice of vaccines. And here's where I'm going to be a little controversial. The great thing about America, I'll tell a story from back when. I was at a party many years ago, and a person, I think before I came to America, and a party in London, somebody was saying, do you know the amazing thing about America? I said, no. And they said, in America, you can always buy exactly what you want. Always. I said, really? And the person said, yeah, he said, I'll give you an example. I said, actually, he said example, because I was in England at that time. Here I would say example. But he said, I'll give you an example. I was in New York, and he said, I really wanted to buy a police light system with the siren and everything. And the real thing, the thing that when the police pull you over, that thing with all the lights, the blue lights, the red lights, the whole thing, and the siren as well. He said, in England, you cannot buy that. It's restricted because otherwise they're concerned that you'll start going around and imitating a police officer, a British police officer, and pulling people over and maybe mugging them. So it's illegal. He said, in America, I just started asking around. And I found a chop shop where I could buy exactly what I wanted. And he indeed bought a complete police rig. So if he wanted to go around pretending he was a police officer, I'm sure he would have been breaking laws, but he could buy it. And what he did was he put it on the roof of his car and he played around with it. And it was great. He used it at parties. I mean, he had a lot of fun with this police thing. I believe that America quite quickly will move to a place where you can choose the vaccine that works best for you based on your inquiries. Now, if you are one of the people going on spring break and you're partying without your mask because you don't believe in science, then you're living a very high-risk life, and as has been reported on the news a number of times, there have been politicians who have caught COVID and died because politically they were oriented to proclaim that they were against masks. They felt they were political pundits. And they sadly, very sadly and tragically, paid the price for being a political pundit rather than a doctor. So if you have survived the pandemic this far, that suggests that you're doing something right, or maybe a lot of things right. And like Kim was saying, I really encourage you, as we look to the spring and the summer and the fall, please maintain everything that you've been doing so far. Don't become bored. Don't become complacent. On a previous program, we talked about the pandemic of 1918. And there, it was combined with the end of World War I. There was enormous pressure to go out and celebrate. And people became complacent when people were doing masks and social distancing. And bear in mind, in 1918, there was no vaccine for the flu. So it was only isolated, I think, in 1925. So they had no, in a test tube, no sample of the Spanish flu. People were just dying in great numbers and getting sick in great numbers. The vaccine didn't, I think, come along until 1945. So the history of the Spanish flu in 1918, people started dropping the restrictions. They wanted to go back. They went to church especially, and parties, and dancing. The big thing in 1918, the social activity, was dance halls. They reopened the dance halls. And surges came back, just like has happened already in France for the third time, and will happen again in those parts of the United States that lower their protections and reopen too soon. Until, as you say, Kim, we get the vaccination rate way higher than it is now. So please be careful, and if you can hold up your defenses and get vaccinated. If you are especially high risk, then please do research and try to find a vaccine that seems better for you. To address the AstraZeneca issue, that is a platelet issue. Remember I said that there's going to be a lot more known about blood, how blood works now than there was before, because there wasn't enough money for basic research. Again, it's always about the money. How are you going to pay for that? What drug are you going to manufacture? For most of us, our blood tends to work. So you're not going to make much money researching blood. Now, a lot of money is being made researching how blood works. And the thing about the AstraZeneca and the push and the pull that Kim has been describing is that I believe they now understand that it's a reaction that occurs in a small number of people in their blood platelets that causes the clotting. And when it's spotted quickly, it can be managed very successfully. My perspective as a very high-risk person with a very high-risk aneurysm at this point is
no way.
Why take a drug that has a small risk of a problem with clotting when a small risk and a small problem with my blood platelets, in my particular case, may not be manageable, and without my blood, I'm dead. So I'm not saying this for anybody else, and I won't specify which, but I'm waiting because when they say April 15th, it's going to be available for everybody in California. I've come this far. I don't live a world in which I have children where I have to be out in the community. I'm going to balance the risk and the reward. And in my particular case, I have to see my surgeon actually in a week. And that's soon enough. I'm going to ask my vascular surgeon, and vascular surgeons are expert in blood circulation because they operate on veins and arteries. He's going to be discussing about my celiac artery aneurysm, of course. And I'm going to be asking him his suggestions, and can he write up a report that for the vaccine that I believe would be appropriate for me, subject to his advice if he has any about the vaccine. And then I'm going to be giving that to my internist, and then I'm going to sit tight and wait, because in a country where if I wanted to buy a police light bar for my car, a real police light bar, I believe that the day will come when I can choose the vaccine that I would like. And I believe that I know I'm not a carrier because I've come this far, and I know that I'm wearing a mask. When I go to the mailbox, I put on my mask. I mean, when I go to see my vascular surgeon, I will walk in with my mask. I will wear my mask throughout. At my medical system, which I go to, the hospital maintains complete social distancing. Everything is being wiped down. Nobody will come close to me except my surgeon, and I know he will have been vaccinated and tested and so forth. So again, Kim, like you, I've talked for longer than I wanted to, and I probably have more things, but I will hand back to you because I want you to... Oh, I could tell my springtime stories about my mouse.
Wait a minute. We might have to make that one next month. We've only got 20 minutes left. I think the renewal and beginning and starting over, we've kind of gone past that. The COVID show was meant to be about a half hour of letting you know some things, and hopefully you found, you know, what we've talked about tonight useful to you, because there's so much different information going around, and it's really this 117 variant that, you know, maybe things would be different. While I appreciate what Simon's saying, in his situation, he's right about doing the research. Part of the reason they're going away from this orderly way that they were doing it, and it says right on the CDC hotline that right this minute, because they've said, okay, go, everybody, go. We're trying to get you vaccinated so you can outrun this variant. We have a shortage of vaccines. Now, I do believe you're right. At some point, we'll have more vaccines than we know what to do with, and people will probably have a choice. But right now, the posture of our government is this variant that you just mentioned has closed down France. And I thought Italy was closed down as well. I'm not sure. But anyway, countries that have been open, and we all thought that we were at the end of hoping that, you know, this vaccine was a bastion of light and hope, and I think it is, but in the meantime, the virus is mutated, and this new UK variant is hitting the younger population, and it's much more contagious, and COVID-19 was extremely contagious, and this is like 60% more contagious and more virulent. So right now the government's posture is they threw everything orderly out the window, and it's 1, 2, 3, go, get your shot as fast as you can, is where they're coming from. And then I just wanted to talk for a second about one of the things that you're going to be hearing about, because New York has already implemented it, and I'm not really going to wager an opinion because we don't have time, but the passport, the vaccine passport. You brought up politics earlier and you know, that it became political, that the mask issue became political, and a lot of things about the virus became political instead of science. One of the new political things is this COVID passport. And the government has said, this is the kind of cagey stuff I don't like, and I don't care what party it is. It happens to be our current administration. They're saying that the government is not going to heavy-handed. They're not going to make you get a vaccine, and they're not going to insist that you get a passport, which is something that you would show whomever to prove that you've had your vaccine. They're not going to do that. But what they are going to do is write the guidelines for the states and the private business community. And New York is calling theirs, it's like the Excelsior. Their passport has just come out, the Excelsior. And to get into any concert or probably Times Square on New Year's Eve, anything where there's a big crowd, you're going to have to show a passport showing that you've been vaccinated. They're working with IBM. In the meantime, many other states are working on this, and what they're looking at is, no, you don't have to get the vaccine, but if you want to fly or travel, go to a concert, go to a NFL game, go to anything where there's a big crowd, get certain jobs, be employed by certain companies. The government is setting the course to make it look like it's about the private sector when they're writing the guidelines and coming out with this passport. Now, because we got 13 minutes, I can see some pros and cons for having a COVID passport. What I can't see, and this will be my last comment on this, what I can't see is the lie by omission that the president put out over the weekend about the voting change in a number of states, specifically in Georgia. Somebody asked him directly when he got off the plane, a reporter, how do you feel about the showing ID? The Republicans, I guess a lot of Republican states have put in policy in a lot of states that they want you to have to show ID to be able to vote. And Ms. Pelosi's totally against that. She's putting in H.R. 1 that would take the voting right power away from the states and give it to the federal government. And they don't want you to have to show ID. And I guess my brief point here, without going any more political, is how can you say you're not forcing people to have a COVID passport in order to live your life with the freedom we're promised in this country? You have to show your ID to go to the doctor, to get a driver's license, to get anything in this country, you've got to show ID. And now they want you to show it to prove that you've had a COVID vaccine and are going about it in a cagey way to boot. And then they don't want you to have to show your ID to be able to vote. Personally, that is a huge hypocrisy, and I don't see any reason why we shouldn't show ID to vote. And to call it racist to me is extremely insulting to the minority community, to think that they're not able to get photo ID and that that is suppressing their ability to vote. We have national ID cards. People drive. There are six in Georgia. There are six different forms of photo ID. So when they asked the president when he got off the plane about what he thought about the ID part of this new legislation, he did what politicians do. We immediately deflected, didn't answer that question, and jumped to what you're hearing all over the news, that people can't even get a drink of water. It's insidious. It's hideous. It's the worst thing I've heard, is what he said. And the story has it that in this same bill that wants you to have to show ID to be able to vote, they're spreading around on media for the sake of sensationalism and making it a race issue, which I don't know how that happened, because every color votes and stands in line to vote and has to show ID or not show ID. I don't even know how they made that racist. But they're saying that you can't have a drink of water or something to eat, and using examples like if you're in the 110-degree Phoenix desert waiting in a 5-hour line to vote, that you can't have a drink of water. That's a lie. You know, I thought everything about that bill sounded reasonable until I heard that, and I thought, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. I can't believe that. So instead of wokely believing it, like all the people I've heard in media repeat over and over and over and over, I read it. And that's not the truth. You can bring water. The polling place can supply water. What you can't do is they don't want people incentives. You know, I used to be in sales. And I was independent. Different companies wanted me to sell their products. Same with doctors. Different drug companies want doctors to push their product. So what they do is they bring you incentives to try to influence you. The thing behind the water is they don't want somebody with a MAGA hat or a Welcome to America, Joe t-shirt coming up and handing you water in line. So the water supply has to be 125 feet away from the line. They're not shortening the hours of voting. And again, you can bring your own water. The polling place can have drinking fountains, bottles of water. 125 feet away, if it doesn't have a political banner on it, there can be a food wagon that you can walk over and get water or a bite to eat if you need it. And the bill also suggests more employees so that people don't have to wait in line any longer than an hour. So do your research. When it comes to the vaccine, as Simon was talking about earlier, and which vaccine you might want. There's only 3 to choose from right now. And we talked about the details of those. Just look, weigh the benefits and the risks of getting a virus that may not do much to you, or may be like the flu, or it may kill you if you're lucky, or unfortunately for those of us listening tonight, a lot of us have lived with chronic conditions because of our brain injury for decades, and it's excruciating. And the last thing we would want is to get a virus that would give us more of that shit for the rest of our life. So we're going to do what we can to not get the virus.
Yeah.
But do your homework and don't listen to the neighbor over the fence, which means don't listen to Tucker, don't listen to Cuomo. And if you hear something out of any of them across the board, do the research yourself and don't be lazy, because you're being lied to. You were lied to.
If I may add one thing
last,
before it'll be very brief, is that members of my family, when they went to their local place to get their shots, they were told, and they were to wait 15 minutes. They were not allowed to leave for 15 minutes. And I thought that was interesting. Presumably, so if you're going, for example, to a local drugstore, something like that, hang around for 15 minutes, but don't just head straight for home on your own, just in case something happens. But I, as I say, I don't know why they did that, but with my family members, they just sat there, nothing happened for 15 minutes, and they left. I don't know whether that's been maintained or dropped, but I felt I wanted
it
responsibly
is.
To mention that.
I'm glad you did, and that all of the places are making you wait. In our case, it was 20 minutes. They want to make sure if a person was going to have an allergic reaction to the vaccine, well, they say an allergic reaction would happen within an hour, but actually if you were going to have anaphylaxis, which is something that if you carry an EpiPen around with you, or if you don't, if you were going to have an allergic reaction, it would happen likely within 15 or 20 minutes of you getting that vaccine. So that's the reason they're having you wait. So, you know, when you get your shot, if they tell you to wait, you know, sit down in the next room that they lead you to and to wait 20 minutes, it's a good idea to do that. You know, don't try to sneak out the back door and run because I got my shot, I'm done, let's get out of here and go get our Krispy Kreme donut. do, you know, stay there for the 20 minutes and make sure that you're not going to have some kind of allergic reaction to the vaccine. That hasn't been prevalent, but it's possible. It's possible. And for people, like I said, that carry an EpiPen, that have had allergic reactions to other types of vaccines and things like that, in any case, it's important to do as you're told in that case for your own protection, to be around people that would be able to get you the help that you would need if you did have a bad reaction to the shot. So in any case, I guess it turned out about like I said, here in Middle America, even though it's officially spring and I love it being light longer, I guess we're going to talk about renewal and new beginnings next month. And tonight, I hope you were able to get some good takeaways on what's available and how to go about and who you get a hold of and the information that you need for the COVID vaccine, because there's so much information going around and things are changing so fast all the time. And Ron, you're in the chat room now, and you were actually one of the people who questioned something the other day that made me want to do part of the show tonight and answering some questions that all of us have had a little confusion on. So in any case, we're down to the last minute. I want to thank you all for being here tonight. Thank you so much, Simon, for being here. And I'm glad that you sound great after your surgery. And I'll be back next week. And Simon will be back the last Wednesday of April. So good night, Simon. I'm glad that you could be here. And good night and God bless to everyone listening tonight. I'm going to close out. I like to support all of our indie artists, but particularly our network, the guy that pays the bills to let me sit here and do the show. Check them out. They've got a brand new Rapture set of an album coming out. The THEE. The letter R, insane.com, therinsane.com. Check them out. Release is coming up. For the end of Brain Injury Awareness Month, which this is the last day, I'm going to close this out with Brain Injury Road. Good night and God bless everybody. Thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
thought to yourself, this life just sucks, I'm worn out. Have you ever been down before so low? You just wanna overdose yourself. Yeah, you try so hard, but life's way too tough, because the brains we gotta give are one large enough. So you try to get by working 9 to 5, full time boy shit for the rest of your life. It sounds like you, well you just like me. The only difference is I found a reason to be free, like the birds in the sky or a fish release. Free like the sun setting over the sea. And I feel so high, just can't help it, ask myself the reasons why I'm blessed with a life so full of benefits. But I'm gonna keep on walking down my road until I'm tired and gray and old. I won't look back until I know I did my best to help this world. When are we gonna stop and realize everybody's equal? I don't know, but as far as I can tell, the rich are getting richer while the poor are needing help. So dig right down deep inside of your soul and find the peace, love and happiness is shining like gold in your mind. So free, so you need to be, so you can, the best you can, and I know you can. Just sing with me now. I'm gonna keep on walking down my road till I'm tired and gray and old. Whoa, I won't look back till I know I did my best to help this world.
Somehow
Been alone.